Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. 12 Years a Slave is Solomon Northup's 1853 memoir about his kidnapping, enslavement, and eventual rescue after 12 years in Louisiana. Northup was born free in New York, worked as a musician and laborer, and lived with his wife and children before being deceived by two men who offered him work in Washington, D.C. Once there, he was drugged, confined, beaten, renamed, and sold into the slave system. The book belongs to the tradition of American slave narratives, but it has a distinctive position because its narrator begins as a legally free citizen and is forced to live under an identity imposed by traffickers. Its purpose is both personal and political, to record what happened to Northup, to document the daily operations of slavery, and to expose the legal, commercial, and social structures that made such violence possible. The memoir remains important as eyewitness testimony, historical evidence, and abolitionist literature. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the kidnapping shows how fragile Black freedom was before the Civil War. Northup's story begins with a crucial contradiction in antebellum America. He is legally free, yet his freedom can be erased by fraud, violence, and racial presumption. His journey from Saratoga Springs to Washington, D.C. is not presented as a reckless adventure, but as ordinary paid work accepted by a man who supports a family. The betrayal matters because it reveals how little protection free Black people could expect once they entered spaces where slavery shaped law enforcement, commerce, and public assumption. When Northup insists that he is free, the response is not investigation but punishment. The beating that follows is a social lesson as much as a physical assault. He is forced to understand that truth has little force when every institution around him is prepared to treat Black testimony as invalid. This makes the memoir more than an account of personal misfortune. It exposes a system in which legal status depends on recognition by others, and where documents, reputation, and citizenship can be overridden by racialized power. The opening, therefore, frames the entire book as an indictment of a society that allowed freedom to be conditional, vulnerable, and easily stolen. Secondly, renaming and sale turn a person into property within the slave market. A central mechanism in the memoir is the forced transformation of Solomon Northup into Platt. An invented identity used to make him marketable as enslaved property. This change is not merely symbolic. It is the practical foundation of his captivity, because the slave trade depends on separating people from verifiable histories, families, legal claims, and names. Northup describes the movement through slave pens, transport routes, auctions, and sales with attention to procedure, showing that the market operates through paperwork, inspection, pricing, threats, and calculated deception. The brutality is therefore not random alone. It is organized through business practices that convert human beings into assets. The sale of enslaved people also reveals how family bonds are treated as irrelevant to profit. Scenes of separation, especially involving parents and children, demonstrate that the market destroys kinship while pretending to conduct ordinary commerce. Northup's account is powerful because it joins emotional horror with logistical detail. Readers see not only that slavery is cruel, but how that cruelty is made routine through naming, classification, valuation, and transaction. The memoir turns the slave market from an abstract evil into a visible process. Thirdly, plantation life is depicted as forced labor governed by surveillance and terror. Northup's years in Louisiana show slavery as a labor regime maintained by constant coercion. The memoir records work in fields, on plantations, and around plantation infrastructure, emphasizing that productivity is extracted through exhaustion, hunger, whipping, and fear of reprisal. Cotton cultivation is especially important, because it links bodily suffering to an economic system that rewards owners for maximum output while denying workers control over their own time, movement, and rest. Northup does not treat violence as an occasional excess committed by unusually cruel individuals. Instead, he shows that violence is built into the management of enslaved labor. Overseers and owners use punishment to enforce pace, obedience, and silence. Even moments that appear calm are shaped by the possibility of sudden assault. This constant threat produces psychological discipline as well as physical pain, because enslaved people must monitor speech, posture, and emotion to survive. The memoir is also attentive to skill and intelligence. Northup uses his abilities as a carpenter, musician, and observer, but those capacities do not secure autonomy. The plantation system absorbs talent while denying personhood, making labor both useful to the enslaver and degrading to the enslaved. Fourthly, the memoir distinguishes individual conduct from the institution that corrupts all relations. Northup portrays slaveholders and white bystanders with varying degrees of cruelty, weakness, and sympathy, but he does not let individual kindness excuse slavery itself. William Ford is presented more favorably than some other owners, while Edwin Epps embodies sadism, instability, and sexual domination. Yet the contrast between them sharpens rather than softens the indictment. Even a comparatively mild master remains a master, and any kindness he offers exists within a structure that gives him ownership over another human being. This distinction is one of the book's most important moral insights. Slavery does not require every participant to be equally monstrous. It requires enough people to accept property claims over persons, obey commercial incentives, and remain silent when violence occurs. Northup's account of Patsy further exposes the gendered violence of slavery, where forced labor, sexual exploitation, jealousy, and punishment converge on an enslaved woman with almost no protection. The suffering of Eliza, separated from her children, reveals another dimension of institutional cruelty. Emotional devastation is treated as incidental to sale. Through these figures, the memoir shows that slavery deforms every relationship it governs, including family, religion, labor, sexuality, and law. Lastly, Northup's testimony functions as evidence, abolitionist argument, and personal reclamation. The book is written as testimony, and that form shapes its meaning. Northup repeatedly grounds his account in dates, places, names, transactions, and observable practices, giving the narrative the character of a legal and historical record. This precision is essential because enslaved and formerly enslaved people often face disbelief from audiences invested in denying the severity of slavery. By presenting concrete detail, Northup strengthens the credibility of his story and contributes to abolitionist literature as a witness rather than a distant commentator. The rescue plot also highlights the importance of communication and legal recognition. Northup can only regain freedom when information reaches people outside the plantation world who are willing and able to act. Yet the aftermath is not a simple restoration. His return to family is accompanied by the knowledge that years were stolen and that the perpetrators largely escaped meaningful accountability. The memoir, therefore, reclaims his name, history, and voice. But it also records the limits of justice in a system that made his kidnapping possible. Its lasting force comes from this combination of personal recovery and unresolved public indictment. In conclusion, 12 Years a Slave should be read by students of American history, readers of autobiography, and anyone seeking a direct account of slavery from a person who experienced both legal freedom and forced bondage. Its intellectual value lies in the way it connects individual experience to institutions, courts, slave traders, plantations, family law, racial custom, and the market economy. The practical benefit for modern readers is not a simple lesson in endurance, but a clearer understanding of how injustice survives when violence is normalized through paperwork. Profit, silence, and social hierarchy. Compared with many slave narratives, Northup's memoir stands out because his kidnapping makes the boundary between freedom and enslavement unusually visible. He can compare his life as a free citizen with his imposed life as plat, which gives the narrative a distinctive analytical sharpness. Compared with fictional anti-slavery works, it carries the weight of firsthand documentation and specific recollection. Compared with broader histories of slavery, it offers the intimacy of lived experience without losing sight of systems and structures. The result is a work that is emotionally severe, historically concrete, and morally precise. It remains essential because it shows slavery not as an abstraction from the past, but as a functioning order sustained by many ordinary mechanisms. If you would like to support Solomon Northup, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.